long, you and I," he said. "We have been tainted by their madnesses."
"I thought you were brought up on Earth. Are you not legally human?"
"My race papers are up there, and the rest of the ship. Big deal."
Silver grunted.
"Consider yourself cosmopolitan, then."
"What does that really mean, my friend?"
"It means the voluntary subjugation of one's racial awareness in the light of the basic unity of sapient kind."
Marco growled.
"It doesn't mean that at all. It means that we learn to speak languages that monkey tongues can handle, and we get along in their world. Ever see a human act like a Shand or a Kong?"
"No," Silver conceded. "But on the other hand, Kin Arad is free and we were imprisoned. Humans always take the lead. Humans always get what they want. I like humans. My race likes humans. Maybe if we didn't like humans, we'd be dead. What's that?"
Marco followed her gaze. Half a mile away, a tower loomed above the city-sized machines. It seemed to be made of giant balls stuck one atop another, and it glowed dull red. Silver pointed out the robots that clustered on the gantries that surrounded it, but Marco had to be content with a vague, eye-watering impression of something huge and ominous.
"A giant coffee percolator?" he hazarded.
Silver shouted at the little robot, which had rolled on ahead. It reversed neatly. Silver indicated the stack of spheres that disappeared into the roof of the cavern. "Basically," it said in Kin's voice, "it's a simple device for heating rock to melting point and ejecting it under pressure."
"Why?" said Marco.
"Volcano," said the robot.
"All that," said the Kung, "to give the disc volcanoes? Madness."
The robot rolled away. "You say that now," it said. "You wait till you see the earthquake machines." The journey under the disc took 2 days, as far as Marco and Silver could calculate. Sometimes they rode, crouching on flat trucks that glided along low tunnels with agonizing slowness, but more often they walked, climbed, inched along ledges, ran like hell across switchyards, where sub-disc machines shunted and thundered on errands of their own. Sometimes they came across dumb waiters, perched incongruously in the whirring underworld. They had a new look, unlike their surroundings, which were worn. Well looked after, carefully maintained, but worn. Marco raised the subject while they were sitting with their backs against a dumb waiter.
"I know," he said. "If the disc people had an industrial revolution and then took a look at the underside of their world, it'd scare the life out of them."
Silver chewed on another mouthful of what Marco presumed was lightly cooked Shand.
"It seems remarkably remiss of the disc builders to allow this dereliction," she said. "I have noticed quite a number of obviously broken-down devices. Surely they could be repaired."
"Who repairs the machines that do the repairing?" said Marco. "A machine like the disc must blow a whole lot of fuses in 100 years or so. What do you do when the robot that repairs the machines that make the parts for the factory that builds the robots that service the Waldos that make the fuses crashes its cog? Unless you get periodic servicing from outside, the disc gradually breaks down."
"We could ask the robot," said Silver.
It was a sick joke. The robot would answer any direct question about the mechanical scenery. They had been treated to a 10-minute lecture on the tide regulation machinery, for example, but ignored all the others. Marco had toyed with the idea of prizing its lid off with something, but allowed caution to get the better of him.
"The place with the red lights must have been out near the disc rim," said Silver. "I have a feeling we're approaching the hub again. Perhaps we can ask Kin."
The robot, which had been sitting silently a few metres away, rolled forward. "We're refreshed," it asked cheerfully. "We will proceed." They stood up stiffly. The cuboid robot led them along a catwalk that opened into a wide, circular gallery, brilliantly lit. Most of the light came from the luminous mist overhead, but an appreciable amount came from the tiny, actinic sun. It floated perhaps 100 metres over a perfect relief model of the disc's surface, several 100 metres across. Except that relief maps didn't have tiny clouds, trailing minute shadows across the land. Marco had never seen them with active volcanoes either. There was no railing to the gallery. The disc map glittered a metre below it, sunlight glinting off seas that looked disconcertingly real. Marco stared down for a long time. Then he said,
"I give up. It's beautiful, What's it for?
One thinks of architecture.